The way I usually give talks is I talk for maybe 10 or 15 minutes and then open it up for questions. And I often find, especially, you know, during, you know, day-long retreats like this, that, you know, the questions are often, you know, get at the heart of things, are actually a bit better than my just trying to figure out what it is you'd like to know. But I will be giving some talks, and I'd like to just start with a short one, continuing from those beginning instructions. And it has to do with just a few things around this approach of recollective awareness meditation. You know, for many years, we didn't have a name for it. When I developed this approach in the late 80s while I was teaching in Sri Lanka, just called it this approach and just kept teaching meditation. And then about 10 years ago, we kind of decided, after going through a few names after, that really didn't stick, to call it recollective awareness. And the reason for that is recollecting back on your meditation sittings helps to produce greater in-the-moment awareness when you meditate. But it's doing it through a different way. Usually with mindfulness meditation practices, what happens is that you're, in a sense, trying. You're doing a practice to become aware in the present moment. You know, to be aware of your breath, body, thoughts. And so there's this particular kind of effort and, I believe, a heightened sense of self-consciousness. You know, that there's a way in which we may become kind of too on top of our experience. And in doing so, we can't help but, I believe, become a bit more self-conscious, more controlling, I would say, awareness in the service of, at times, managing rather than just knowing what's going on. In a meditation practice where you're actually allowing thoughts and feelings to go on, you'll find that you get caught up in your thoughts and you'll lose a sense of being in the moment or being present with your experience. That's going to be quite natural. It doesn't mean you're not aware in some way, that there may actually be a degree of awareness going on when you're thinking about things, but it's just not quite as pronounced as if you were trying to notice it. It also, in an open meditation practice, you're not interrupting your thoughts and feelings as you would, I believe, in a more structured mindfulness kind of practice. So things are going on a bit longer, and you might find that your thinking, your emotions have a certain kind of trajectory to them, kind of a momentum, a way of, you know, slowly get, forming themselves over maybe several seconds or minutes, so that you may not necessarily know kind of like why you're thinking about something or where the thinking is going until you get there. And when you get there, you might have a sense, oh, okay, that makes sense. Whereas if you know, like had a certain thought and you immediately said, well, this is fear or this is anxiety or this is a depressing thought or trivial thought, you might just stop it quickly and not notice that it could change over the course of time and actually is trying to go somewhere. So often when people meditate in this approach, what they can find is they're sitting and maybe they're having a trivial thought or a memory comes up, and by letting it go on a bit longer, it actually leads in another direction that wouldn't have opened up otherwise. And so we're kind of looking for this within our practice, that there's a certain way that thoughts may, and feelings and memories and intentions in the future may have a kind of cohesion to them that we get to know if we allow them over time. But then the question is, how do you become aware of them if you do that? You know, how do you develop awareness? So the way I see it is you start to develop awareness by remembering, you know, and reflecting back and seeing, well, you know, what was I going through at this time period of my sitting? What was happening here? You know, the conversations I was having with people, the thoughts, reflections about earlier in the day, the different plans, and not just that you were planning, but you know, more specifically, you know, were you thinking about meeting somebody, or was it a work project, or you know, what was really going on here? And when you do that kind of recollection, I believe you get closer to what you were experiencing. You start to reflect back and you see, okay, you know, it wasn't just that I was upset at somebody. I remember what that person said. I remember how I reacted. I can remember how it built. And so you have more information about that experience. And being familiar with that in recollection, I think, is much more possible than it is in the present moment. You can try this out, experiment with it, but my general sense is that it's in the present moment we get too much into correcting and, you know, changing and doing things so that we don't really let certain thoughts and feelings develop or emerge. The recollecting after the sitting, and at times you might find you recollect during the sitting, I believe creates more familiarity with what you experience in meditation. It's a way to become aware without trying to become aware. Instead of trying to be mindful in the moment, you're actually using your memory of the way your mind works, of the different things you thought about or experiences you had while meditating, so that when you sit again and something similar happens, you carry with you that familiarity. There's a kind of awareness because, and what happens often for people in this approach is they start to say, well, I know this experience. I've seen it a few times. I'm familiar with it. I have a much better handle on it. And I believe that kind of awareness is less self-conscious often and enables us to see more into how our experiences are fueled, how they're fed, how they're conditioned, rather than being part of a practice where we're, in a sense, trying to do something, trying to have a particular equanimity around our experience or a particular non-judgmental stance or just a particular, maybe, pure way of knowing, which, you know, may happen at times doing various practices, but much of the time I think that's not happening. But what is? And what often is happening when we're meditating, I mean, you can trust it, that you'll be thinking the same thoughts again and again, various emotions will come back, memories will happen, you have some of the same experiences. So my sense of it and what I've seen over 25 years of teaching people this way is that becoming familiar with it starts to actually not only produce more awareness of certain thoughts and feelings that keep coming back, but different ways of relating to it, relating to our experiences maybe with a bit more patience or kindness or interest, you know, like instead of trying to get past a certain kind of feeling, we may find, oh, I'm feeling, you know, some fear here again, and it's interesting now. And, you know, at first I really wanted to get rid of it, but maybe it's about something that really I could look into now, or I can learn more about, and to trust that in your meditation sittings, your mind will develop ways, you know, to be, I would say, able to hold, you know, your experiences in a kinder, friendlier, gentler way. That you know, our practice, you know, may develop certain qualities that seem to be subtler, more in the background. And I also suggest when you journal or reflect back on your sitting to kind of look at, well, you know, not just that you were angry or upset, but how are you relating to that? How are you holding that? What else was going on in the background around it? Because that's actually, I believe, the more important thing. You know, if you're holding your anger and you're pushing against it and you're saying that's unacceptable or that really has to go away or that's... you know, I can't live with that, you'll find that, you know, whenever you experience it again, you probably have some of the similar stories around it, that you can't live with it, that you hate it, that you want to get rid of it. And those thoughts are being produced by the anger. You know, in fact, I don't know if it's the problem of, you know, you can't get rid of anger with anger, you know, which you find in the, you know, Dhammapada. But rather, you know, how do you actually work with it? Are you, if you're friendlier with it, if you're patient, more patient with yourself around it, if you can kind of take it in as well, you know, I'm upset for probably a good reason. You know, I usually find that there is a good reason for me to feel this way. Let me listen to that reason. You know, it doesn't mean that I'm going to produce more anger. It may actually mean I'm willing to get to know this experience more intimately, more deeply, in a kind of mature way. Not, you know, deeply in a way of trying to, you know, go into the sensations around the anger and break it up and notice its impermanence and, you know, how it's usually taught. But more, well, what keeps anger going? What keeps this fire alive? Because that's the more central question. And I do really teach from an early Buddhist perspective where there are a few Buddhist suttas that go more directly into trying to look at, you know, how we, you know, throw more wood and, you know, tinder, you know, on a fire, and how not to do that. That instead of feeling like in our experience we have to snuff everything out that's a problem, how do we kind of be with it in a way that we actually learn how not to feed it, how to fuel it? And that's a different orientation around looking at yourself. It's one where you'll find you, when you probably saw it in this meditation sitting, that sometimes you just can't help but adding more fuel to something. You know, you can't help but you know, being afraid and thinking more fearful thoughts and having the feeling get stronger and go on and on. You can't help at times recalling a conversation and feeling more resentment or contempt than you did when you first had it. That's human, you know, that's something that we do. But how do we actually start to look at it so that we begin to kind of know that experience and how it builds and find ways in which we don't put as much into it, you know, in a sense we don't create it more or build on it more. I think, you know, for me, some of the issue with more traditional vipassana practices and mindfulness practices in this area is that there's this thought, if I were just with the breath or my body, or if I was just in a certain state of mind, these states won't arise, you know. So then the idea becomes, if I could get to another state of mind or another place, I won't feel, you know, these emotions, I won't have these things. That may happen, you know, on a few occasions, but I don't believe it's going to happen for us all the time, or it's kind of like a reliable method. What's actually more realistic is that even if you've had experiences where you've been very equanimous with certain, you know, intense emotions, you come back into the world, into your interactions, to work, to relationships, and those come back again, and you find yourself being drawn into some of the same things, and sometimes it's even worse because you've had such a wonderful break from it. So, you know, the question here is, well, how do you actually then go into your experiences, you know, that are going to keep coming up again and again? And that's something about this particular approach to meditation. Because you're allowing to a greater extent your thoughts and emotions into the sitting, you're also going to have more repetitive thoughts. You're also going to have more of a sense of going back over things, second, third, fourth chances, you know, to look at as something that's come up within you. And you may find that while you're doing this in meditation, other qualities are coming into play. You're perhaps holding with more patience or kindness or interest, and something is starting to change around it. And that is what my hope would be for someone kind of doing this kind of practice. So I just wanted to give you this kind of general idea around this approach, and I'll be able to go into more specific areas, you know, as we go on, especially with your questions, which means, you know, now's the time if you have questions. Yes, what's your name?
Yes. Marcia.
Marcia.
I was just wondering, I learned to do meditation you're writing it down during the meditation, what would be, could you just elaborate a little bit on what the difference would be between just kind of drifting off on a thought, sort of, you know, being totally caught up in it and so on, and how you look at it when you're doing this kind of meditation?
Okay. At first, let me just say, it will seem pretty much the same. You know, it's probably not going to seem much different than, you know, sitting out watching a sunset and just thinking about things, or going for a walk and your mind just going on all these different tangents. But after a while, what starts to happen more is, because you've been bringing your attention back to your body on occasion, you've been aware that you actually are meditating, like you kind of get a sense of that let me say this, if anyone here has done like more traditional practices of observing the breath, observing your posture, things like that, you've probably trained your mind fairly well already. You know, if you've done several months or a few retreats, you probably already have trained your mind pretty well to come back to something, you know, once your mind has wandered, you know, and that you can trust that training. I mean, why have you been doing it all this time? There's a way in which, you know, it's going to kind of, you're going to go off a little bit to some thoughts, but you may find that there's places where it trails off, or your attention just kind of comes back to hearing sounds or back to the body. And so I would trust that more in this kind of approach. So for those people, you just may need to let some of your thoughts go on a little bit longer. And occasionally, if you need to, do a minute or two of an awareness of breathing or something just to remind yourself. And you'll find that it's quite a bit similar. The other thing is that I believe that most meditation instructions that start with awareness of the breath and the body are, in a way, overcorrecting a perceived tendency that we have to be too much in our heads. You know, that mostly when you start those practices, you're going too far into trying to stop your mind or stopping thoughts from happening, and trying to just stay with something physical. In this approach, what I'm actually doing at the beginning is saying, we'll go further now to this other direction of really allowing thoughts and really allowing things to go on. Hopefully we're trying to get somewhere in the middle, you know. But that's something that we're going to find for each of us at different times, what that kind of more middle ground, middle area really is. And it will differ from sittings to sitting. Yes.
I guess I found myself. My name is Paul.
Paul. Yes.
I found myself once in a while. I sort of. I guess it was a thought, but it was sort of orienting myself to the presence and said, kind of like, where am I? Mm-hmm. You know, and it was really about bringing myself to the present moment in relation to whatever I've been thinking about. And I found that really nice. I found that it wasn't always nice, but it was helpful. And the other thing I found was that just two of my other maybe more traditional relating to thoughts practices is that at times there was a kind of tactile aspect to it, which is kind of physical. So the thoughts are, I'm aware of thoughts without processing the semantic content in a way. I'm just like, you know, it becomes like almost like an object or something. It isn't even fully formed like that, but I'm relating to it like in that sort of way. And so, I guess I'm wondering what reflecting that back.
To this practice. Well, a couple of things. One is that the question, "Where am I?" I kind of wonder, was that a question or in itself a technique that you had learned or taught, or is that something you discovered just in the sitting?
That's that's the way I articulate it in my, yeah. It probably isn't the way that I would have been taught through kind of guided practices. Would be more about relocating myself.
Okay.
An image of banks of a river or something like that. This was different. This was just more like, and it wasn't like an anxious self, it's just where am I? You know, that's how I would put it into words.
Okay, so it's something that came up naturally within you, around it. That's what I want to say, that it didn't come from outside. Okay. And to me, that's part of the difference in this kind of approach. Is what I'm looking at with meditation is how do certain things come up more internally rather than externally from a teacher or a tradition. So you might find that you yourself stumble upon something which would be found in another tradition, or a teacher might teach, but you find, no, this is something that just seems to come up within you, and you're actually connected with it. It does something else. You can't really necessarily put it into a technique form, but it seems to be something that is quite natural as a as something that arises within meditation, and so it's good to recognize it. Those are very useful things to know about yourself. It helps us in kind of getting a sense that we can probably learn best about how to meditate by paying attention to how we meditate. The second thing you said about you know, the kind of the somatic experience around thinking, the bodily experience around it, you know, that's a really good observation around meditation practice and around a human mind and body. You can't artificially divide things. You can't cut the mind from the body. You know, you basically need to, I believe, you know, around meditation practice, to see that awareness of thoughts and emotions may also be awareness of connecting with the body in certain ways, and certain sensations and certain textures and tones and, you know, background feelings that we have. And to really be able to bring that in can expand our range of awareness, you know. Whereas, you know, many times meditation is taught, awareness is taught by, you know, learn how to focus on the body, then feelings and thoughts and so on. And so people will tend to divide them up, and in the end, it may actually lead to a particular kind of internal split around things. And often I've heard an idea where, you know, emotions get experienced as sensations. But much of our ordinary life, emotions are actually experienced as thoughts that are connected to the feelings. And I believe that that's actually a much more pertinent kind of way to go into understanding, well, what keeps an emotion going? Not so much, you know, staying with the bodily side, but the bodily side may be one part of the whole experience. Any other questions? Far in the back? Pardon?
I'm Stephanie.
Stephanie, yes.
I've been having a lot of doubts with my practice recently around this idea that kind of in this adult business, they reassure me that, you know, worrying and being anxious and all the different things that we feel are perfectly natural, they're wired into us, you know, there's nothing we can do about that. Yet to discover our true nature, we need to kind of learn this real deep concentrated kind of, you know, do these very specific techniques. And my feeling kind of was just like, isn't there kind of more natural way for a human animal to discover their true nature than kind of a very, you know, specified route? And I feel like your instructions offer kind of that answer to my doubt, that, you know, that just being still and being with ourselves is, that's going to just happen naturally.
Right, yes. Yeah, and that's it. You know,
Could you pray, see what?
Okay. Which she's basically asking is many techniques are kind of teaching that in order to find your true nature, in order to find something, I think, which is more true about you or more developed, you need to actually transcend or go past, you know, your feelings and emotions, and that you can't necessarily, you can't bring those into your experience. And that bringing them into your experience, bringing your emotions and thoughts and things about you into your experience may also be a path to finding something more deeper or true about yourself. That may be another direction in practice. And that's basically what I'm also saying here, that the idea of, like the term, bypassing, spiritual bypassing, which, gets used a lot in, psychological discussions around meditation, basically that, 30, 40 years ago when Vipassana was coming first to the West in a big way, it was very common to separate psychology and Buddhism, or Buddhist practice and psychotherapy, and to kind of look at it as a way of that Buddhist practice was dealing with something else, was either dealing with trying to see your experience as impermanent and changing and no self, and that psychotherapy and that other direction was actually seeing things more in terms of a self and taking into account, people's emotions and personal life and relationships. And when it came to Vedantic and Hindu practices, there was also this kind of more extreme thing of you need to be able to transcend your ego, and then all your pain and fear and anger will actually go away. So there were these kinds of narratives around practice that supported, I believe, a more kind of rigid retreats, more kind of isolation in meditation, that kind of made it so that the meditative process was more or less geared to some kind of higher states of consciousness and transcendence and self-purification through that means. But the way it's come now, it's come, especially in the last 10 years, there's been much more looking at that we really do need to be able to look at the way we are in our daily lives, who we are, how we interact, and things like that, in order to, in a sense, see some of the truths about our experience. Basically, years ago, I wrote, the way I looked at it was the Buddha's teaching, the Dharma, is really about the truth of your experience, being honest with yourself, knowing what it is you're experiencing, whether you're, lying down, walking, sitting, eating, whatever you're doing, that's, whatever practice you're doing is to be able to kind of get a sense of, well, if I'm honest with myself, I'm able to look at things about myself, and I can see how my suffering is created. I can actually understand how I'm creating suffering and harm in my lives and in other people's lives. That also is a path to alleviating that suffering. It's a path to, in a sense, like I was saying earlier, being able to withdraw some of the fuel, to take away some of what, or to learn how to actually change without having to try to transcend, without having to feel like you have to go beyond. But this is just these are the issues that we're actually working with in practice these days. And to consider those, I believe, is important, especially when you take up a practice. If you're given a practice that is asking you to do certain things and be a certain way that is really against your nature or against your sense of really where you want to go, then perhaps question it nowadays. You have more options. 50 years ago, there were fewer options for people. Nowadays, they're just popping up all over the place. To really consider that whole area. And what I'm actually trying to get across here is that meditation is really an ideal place, you know, to look at your emotional life and to look at relationships and things going on with you. You are sitting down, you're being quiet, you're still, your mind, in a sense, can start to get focused and concentrated on things that I think are more important things for you to look at than just your breath or body sensations, you know, that you can actually find that meditation may be able to be much more useful, and there are other skills to develop in meditation than may have been open to you in other practices. But, you know, the last thing I want to say about that from my point of view is that I really don't teach people, I don't give instructions, really. My way of teaching is to listen to people's experiences and talk to them about their experiences and what's coming up for them, the certain qualities and developments within their practice, to help make that those things more explicit, and to trust that that's going to help, that's going to be actually better than an instruction, that what comes up from within you in your sittings as a skillful, good way to meditate may actually be of more value than some of the, you know, something coming from a teacher or a particular tradition. Though those things can also be of help. So, any other questions?
Okay, can I ask about self-consciousness?
Yeah.
Because when I was thinking about observing what's coming up during a meditation, I began to think, well, that I would enter into a feeling of trying to create a checklist as I meditate, think, oh, this is happening, I must remember to think about that later, or observing the pattern and splitting myself off in a way. That seems to me a risk, and how to diminish it or how to deal with it, or does it come from a sense of, well, I can think of a word.
Well, that's the thing, is that what you're doing around it by kind of wondering about this, kind of making, you know, looking at your experience and trying to remember it, trying to make a list to kind of check off, this is what happened here, it's happened there, or it happened then, that you know, you notice your process of doing it. My sense of it from working with a lot of people around their meditation practice is that, you know, any instruction, any new way of going into meditation is going to produce some kind of side effects. You know, it's going to have things that we don't necessarily want to create, or that we feel will get in the way, and that's just part of a practice. So even this practice I'm teaching you, you know, it's probably, you know, with some people it brings out, you know, they're rehearsing or what they're going to write in their journal. They're trying to remember one thing after another. They're feeling bad about how they can't remember much when the sitting is over. You know, there's so many things that will come up, you know. But that's kind of what we have as a trade-off, just like taking medication, you know, for a condition, is that, you know, certain things happen that are unwanted, but we still do it. It's how we then maybe, in at least in meditation, learn about ourselves from these things that are coming up that are kind of getting in the way. So I would suggest that rather than trying to stop something, like if you're thinking about what you're going to write in your journal, let yourself think about it. Just kind of notice that this is what you're doing, and there's something, this is the new thing that's moved into the foreground for you. You know, if you're making a checklist, you know, let yourself make a checklist and kind of look at that checklist a bit, and what goes into making checklists? What's the history around this a bit? You know, where this is a habit of mind or way of being that I fall into, and now I can look at it in my meditation sitting. Or, you know, you're meditating in this way and you feel, another part of it is, you know, really confused and doubting and thinking, well, this is aimless, this doesn't go anywhere, what should I be doing? Well, you could sit and look at what it's like to feel aimless and not going anywhere, you know? There is a lot to be gotten out of that. In fact, my experience, you know, as taught meditation practices early on, is that my teachers didn't, you know, they were so convinced of the rightness of their practices, of what they were teaching, that they didn't give me an opportunity to really go into my doubts and confusion. And frankly, so I had to also keep that to myself at times, or, you know, explore it outside of the practice. It had to be something separate. I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be, right there in the center at times when it's coming up. I mean, who is really certain about what it is they're doing, all the time? And if we are certain, then maybe we've grown a little rigid, a little tight around it. Any other questions or anything? Everything's going on time. In England. Okay. All right. If it's all right, I'd like for us to sit again for about 40 minutes this time. But there are a couple of things I didn't say before, which I'm going to say them now. If you feel sleepy and you are drifting off, let yourself go towards sleep. Don't try to wake yourself up in this approach. And if you want to lie down, you can. And if you need to move, from one place to another, do so really slowly and quietly, mindfully. So we'll do that. We'll start our sitting in a couple minutes. And if anyone needs to take a quick break, you can do that and come back.